Hello, everybody. It is great to be here. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm the CEO, president, and founder of GSD, Get You Done Venture Studios, premier AI and quantum venture studio located in Silicon Valley. I've been involved in startups for over 35 years and 17 startups, love artificial intelligence and quantum computing, and we believe that intellectual capacity is evenly spread around the world, but opportunities are not. With that, I've got my incredible guest today from Zempli, the award-winning company out of Silicon Valley, doing remote patient monitoring. And I've got the esteemed CEO, Aparna Pujar, who's here today to talk about her journey from corporate to being a startup entrepreneur and kicking it. So with that, I'd like to introduce Aparna. Hi, Aparna.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Gary. Nice to see you. Nice to be back on the show again.
Yeah, it's great to see you. So where are you today? Are you in Silicon Valley?
Yeah, pretty much. This is home for us. And, you know, we love being in Silicon Valley. There's a lot of interesting things going on here, especially in AI and quantum computing. And we're happy to see the progress that AI has made over the last few years. And one of the most important areas that it has to address is, you know, caring for our beloved elderly loved ones. And I am really excited to be, you know, to what that means for Zempli as a company. And also what that means for our customers and people who care for their parents or their elderly loved ones.
So tell us a little bit about your journey. When did you come to the US for the first time?
I came to the US almost 30 years ago. So now, you know, I've lived in the US more than anywhere else in the world. I'm originally from India. Grew up in India, you know, did my education in India, but came here for my master's and my business degree. And then now, you know, I've worked for some of the iconic Silicon Valleys. I was fortunate enough to get that chance, sort of rode the internet wave, and both the bubble and the burst. So took a lot of learnings from that experience, specialized in really, you know, using technology to solve some really important world's problems and challenges that we face as a humanity.
So as you're going down through this journey, you know, you've seen these bubbles, you've seen these incredible upsides. How do you ride it? So as these entrepreneurs that are out there watching this, how do you ride the wave? You know, so when you're never really at the top, but you're never really at the bottom. You know, how do you go down through and adjust? Because I remember being out there myself during the financial crisis, early 2000s, when the market the bottom went out of the market, and all these companies like pets.com, all these incredible companies were out there, had started to struggle. How do you ride the ups and downs? How do you adjust to it?
Well, I think the best way to do it is, you know, not get distracted by the ups and downs. The most important thing is, you know, focusing on customers and solving an unmet need. And, you know, as long as you're creating value, the larger noise around the ups and downs just tend to be in the background. You know, it's very important that you take a problem and solve it really well. And then, you know, you don't have to depend. I mean, the hype always works in bringing general awareness to the problem in the domain. But as we have seen, you know, hype is always about a technology and a concept, but not about solving a real world problem. So you do take that into an account to see how it can benefit you. But ultimately, it's the ability to solve an unmet need and creating a product that drives value.
So when you went down through it, I mean, you've seen it. You were with Yahoo, right? So how was it with Yahoo? Because they had a phenomenal ride up. I mean, it's like riding a rocket ship. And how was it going up, riding that wave up? And, you know, how did the company adjust coming? How did those companies adjust, you know, when they're not doing quite as well and you got a Google coming out?
I think every company goes through that cycle. You know, every company has its ups and downs. I mean, I was at Yahoo during its golden years, and obviously it is one of the best companies I worked for. I still bleed purple in many ways, as they say. I think Yahoo was one of the pioneers when it came to figuring out how to mass distribute, you know, high quality news and information to a larger audience. So that was its original value proposition anywhere. And I think to the largest extent, it still holds true. You know, and again, it was driven by a very from a perspective on using technology to build products for scale. So I think fundamentally that continues to still be the core concept of Yahoo. And once you have that nailed, then you know you're going across looking at, you know, what is the next problem you can solve with that same model, right? So that's how, you know, those are the first generation internet companies. Of course, you know, the technology itself has gone through multiple iterations in the last 15 to 20 years. And what we see today is phenomenal in terms of, you know, what the internet on its own has been able to achieve. It's given birth to the mobile revolution. It's given birth to the quantum computing revolution. So, you know, that's what I feel is a good company with good fundamentals, good technology can do.
So when you went down through it, you know, I know you were an engineer, you know, in Bangalore, and you came over to Santa Clara University, and then you went to Stanford. How did you adjust? How hard was it for these companies that are out there to be able to adjust to the, you know, coming to a place like Silicon Valley, Aparna? How do they adjust, and how do they really, you know, take advantage of it? Because it must have been a cultural shock coming in, right, from, you know, coming in at least initially. But how do you adjust to this kind of a Silicon Valley normality?
I think in some ways I definitely felt like I don't overthink it, right? You know, you look at the opportunities, look at what you can do and how you can leverage the opportunities that are given to you. Some of it is basically, you know, all your, you know, skill sets. Like, you know, when I came here, I came with a certain set of skills. I was a good programmer, you know, I knew how to program, you know, and internet was taking off. So it was a perfect match. You know, I found an opportunity, I kind of dove into it. And, you know, it put me on a path to success. And in fact, I remember, you know, being one of the youngest person to have even gone into executive management. I was a director at the age of 32, leading a tech team. You know, I think it's all about, you know, right time, right opportunity. Some of it is luck. So I feel like, but there's no dearth of it in Silicon Valley. I think I've enjoyed being here. It's as they say, you know, it's the think tank for the world. So being in this environment, it just rubs off, you know, the intellectual power of this location, of this geographic location, has a very profound impact on who you are and how you develop as a person.
Well, how did you change? So when now, what do you think the difference between the Silicon Valley mentality and that mentality in the rest of the world is? What is the difference? What are the differences?
I think keeping an open mind. I feel like, you know, that is the fundamental aspect of what it is, what it's like to be in Silicon Valley, right? Normally, you know, people come up with, Silicon Valley is known to come up with some crazy ideas, you know, and taking that idea into reality is what I feel is the DNA of the geolocation here. You know, there's no dearth of good ideas, but also there's an enough, you know, support system, as I was saying, the ecosystem that actually can help you take that idea from a concept to reality. And that is, I don't think it's necessarily only Silicon Valley. I'm starting to see it in other parts of the world also. But it just sort of, you know, there is a vibe here that I think is very different from what I've seen in other parts. But I'm glad to see that, you know, the rest of the world is also kind of coming onto this platform. You know, there are a lot of great people in the world who have fantastic ideas. And, you know, those ideas need a platform. Those ideas have to come to market with good products, good solutions, and really, you know, solutions that make a profound change in human life.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I've just recently started to hear of companies that are actually coming back to the Valley that have moved out. I've heard of a couple of them recently, and then post Series A companies that are coming back over because they're looking for the talent and they can't find them in places like Miami, right? They can't find the skill sets. And also the access to capital. So do you see that? Do you feel that out there now? How does it feel today?
So I think I'm a little spoiled. That's what I would say. Like, I'm used to working with the best of the best people that Silicon Valley has to offer. You know, even when I was in the corporate world, I had the opportunity to work with some amazingly talented people. And I don't know what is the cause and the effect. I think it's both, right? So more talented people come into the Valley, it creates that environment, and that I say, you know, has this influential effect on the others. So one begets the other. So that, I think that's what is critical. Absolutely, you know, I think the skill level, skill level is by far, I feel, way beyond what I've come across in other parts of the country. But, you know, nothing that makes it, there's no one, you know, one size fits all approach. I've come across some amazing people in other parts of US and other parts of the world as well. So I think ideology, you know, giving root and, you know, the foundation to an ideology is what Silicon Valley does well.
No, I agree with you. So let's talk about Zemply. And, you know, you have this incredible idea, remote patient monitoring, working with the elderly, where we've got this, the baby boomers are now coming in age. They're starting to look at things like, you know, how can they have a better quality of life staying in their homes? How can they get down through and have better service, right? More hyper-personalized service. So when you came up with Zemply, what was the idea behind it? And where is Zemply today?
Well, I think, you know, the roots of Zemply really starts with me. I became a remote caregiver for my aging parents. And, you know, my parents live in India. I live here. And one of the things that I realized was, you know, how difficult or challenging this problem is. You know, at the end of the day, you love your parents. You know, you want to do everything right by them. My dad was chronically diabetic for almost 25 years, so his health was deteriorating. And the challenge for me was, you know, how do I come up with a system that gives me the ability to keep an eye on them from where I was, but also understand the constraints of, you know, what as a solution will work, right? It will be very easy for someone to say, you know, let's put a video camera and keep an eye on them, but, you know, upholding their personal space and dignity was critical. I mean, I didn't want to build a surveillance system. There's millions of them out there. I didn't have to do that. I wanted to build a system that was all about, you know, giving them their personal space, giving them the ability to, you know, uphold their dignity, and then still give me a way for me to kind of keep an eye out on them, check in on them once in a while to make sure they were doing okay. And I think it was an important realization that made me quit my job and said, you know, this is a problem for the world that has to be solved. And I was going to give it a shot. I think my original idea that I hacked together with a bunch of sensors sort of worked. And, you know, that idea became a product. Product is now a business. We have customers. We have revenues. And Zemply is going into the growth mode. The COVID pandemic actually was a good, in some ways, you know, an impetus for us because the world changed because of the pandemic, right? And our elderly population, as we all know, was severely affected and marginalized because of what happened with the way, you know, the health systems kind of crashed because of pandemic. And what I'm seeing now is, you know, there's always a phoenix that rises out of the ashes. So the industry is starting to transform. And I think that's the right signal we were looking for in order to sort of get into the growth mode. So Zemply is in the growth mode now. We are actually starting to, you know, get solid product market fit. And one of the things we like about the space we are in is, you know, how big an opportunity is this for us to innovate, you know? So we come across so many challenges that, you know, our customers face, which our customers are usually providers, you know, whether they're clinical or non-clinical caregivers, et cetera. And we just feel like, you know, there's so much we can do for them, so much we can do to make their job easier. And then the ultimate beneficiary of these are the elderly loved ones. And in some ways you're connected, like just like I was interested in, you know, being this better caregiver for my parents, I want to provide those tools and capabilities to other caregivers other family members who are, you know, looking at this, staring at this, you know, issue and trying to figure out how to make this somewhat sustainable, right? So you know this. I mean, you were a caregiver for your dad, and you know, when you and I kind of talked about Zemply as a company, we sat through so many conversations figuring out, you know, how challenging is it for a person to be caring for one.
You can't imagine, you know, you're in your dad's and your parents are in India, or your parents are in Pennsylvania, you're in California. What do? You want to be there all the time, but you know, there's realistic scenarios of and limitations of what you can do. So having that connection point with a remote patient monitoring that it increases the quality of life. I mean, the other thing is a lot of the nursing homes, if you can keep your parents in their house longer, one is going to dramatically reduce your expenses.
Exactly.
Quality of care. My dad, I remember when he went to the nursing home for 2 months so I could fix his house because it needed a lot of work. He went downhill like crazy. In fact, you know, he was like, he didn't even know who he was. And part of it was they gave him the medication, you know, they gave him too much medication. We brought him home and all of a sudden he snapped back to normal. I'll never forget it. I was right there. He was like normal. Hey, son, come on in here. I want to talk to you. Let's go out and let's have a walk, right? So I took him out and he took his wheelchair and we went out originally. Then he went to a walker. Then he started walking on his own, you know, those kind of things. And they said he would never, well, they said he was going to die in 7 days and he ended up living 3 years. So for all you out there, you know, the having your parents and having tools like Zemply that can dramatically impact their quality of life and their ability to stay home or have even better care in a nursing home is just phenomenal. I mean, that's the way it's going to be because it's all about the data. What can you do to make your life better?
Exactly.
Yeah. So as you're going down through this journey, so you started out in the U.S. What about the rest of the world? And, you know, do people get it yet, Aparna? Do they understand how important this is or where are they in terms of their learning curve?
I think people, so there are two, I think that I would phrase the problem a little different. People understand the importance of, understand the sort of the enormity of the challenge that they are going to face, right? No caregiver goes into this thinking that this is going to be an easy cakewalk, right? Everyone sort of knows that it's going to be difficult. The only thing that you don't know is, you know, how complex it can get over a period of time. And, you know, it's not like you can go to a school and learn these skills. You're learning on the job. You know, being a caregiver is learning on the job. And I think that problem has sort of always been there. What I'm seeing is, you know, people are starting to openly articulate it, right? As you know, most people kind of take it as fait accompli, right? Hey, I'm a caregiver. This is my life now. And, you know, they sort of accept it for what it is without saying, you know, this can be better or this can be different. I can do a better job.
They don't have time to think.
Like that is changing that. And that is sort of, you know, transcending into organizational level as well, right? So from a personal level, like me as a daughter taking care of my parents to, you know, taking that now into a business or an organizational setting where a caregiver who is challenged with, you know, dealing with not just the what I call as, you know, typically you're caring for your elderly for with their activities of daily living, for example, you know, toileting, bathing, etc. But, you know, this caregiver is now looking at the patient and saying, you know, these people are living with so many comorbid conditions, right? So how do I, as a first responder, as a first person who is in a home trying to make this work for them, be a better caregiver? Right. So that is what is changing. And, you know, I feel like caregivers have to be empowered with more tools. They work with very little information today. Everything is sort of in situation when they're seeing this. But what data can do, what AI can do is, you know, give them that insight, give them that information to make them be a better caregiver. And I think at the end of the day, every caregiver aspires for it. You know, they are in the job because it fulfills them in very different ways. And to make that more fulfilling is the best thing you can do. And technology can be a viable tool for that.
No, you're right. You know, and it gives a quality of life a lot for the patient, makes their quality of life a lot better. gives an opportunity to be able to do things they normally wouldn't be able to do. And quite frankly, I can tell you in my dad's case, you know, getting him out of the hospital, they said he was going to die in 7 days. They said he would never walk and talk again. And he walked and talked. And being able to spend an extra 3 years with your loved one, on the other side of it, you know, those nursing homes are really expensive. They can cost $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 a month to put them in a nursing home. And all of a sudden, all that money that they worked so hard to save, you know, they don't have it anymore. So keeping them in their house where they can have a better quality of life and be in familiar surroundings, which helps them mentally, changes the dynamics. I know with my dad, when he was going down through his dementia, as soon as I brought him home, he wasn't like talking about crazy things. He was talking about, hey, you know, I bought him a dog, a basset hound. Hey, where's my dog? Let's go take the dog for the walk. I want to talk to you about the yard. He wanted me to do some work in his yard. It found like I was a kid again, you know, to do that and they do that. It brought him back. And, you know, having those school skills, and then also in the nursing home, having those in the nursing home where it can go down through and help them to be able to have a better quality of life, because it's all about the data and they got a lot of patients, right? And so how do you make sense of what's happening with that patient?
Yeah. And you know, and you brought up a very good point, Gary. I think the thing that we all have to remember is the home is probably the most beloved asset everybody has. You know, you've spent your life in there. You have memories associated with that. Your children have grown into the home. Your grandkids have played in the home. So the whole concept about, you know, how to make home, your best sort of opportunity to, you know, live your life. I think it's important to appreciate that. And, you know, the world is changing. We are becoming more digitized. You know, there's internet everywhere. And I feel like taking advantage of some of these available platforms and you know, innovations that are coming to the space can get you to, you know, use your home, you know, transform your home into a better asset. So at Zemply, we're all about, you know, creating your home into a digital caring environment, right? And when you in the comfort of your home, if somebody is, in this case, somebody being the technology, can be your partner in helping you, you know, become more independent, become more healthy, focus on your well-being, enjoy a better quality of life, I think it's the right choice to make. In fact, you know, one should be adopting that and saying, why not, right? Like, let somebody else do the job. Let me enjoy, you know, what I feel. Let me enjoy and let me do what I feel I should be doing, you know, and while going what we call as hands-free mode, like delegate the care to a technology platform. We actually have providers connected to the platform. So, you know, there's the AI will sort of diagnose and provide insights, but there's always someone who's jumping in, intervening to if there's something wrong or an anomaly to address it right away. And, you know, that's the way it should be. You know, I shouldn't be worried about my health all the time. I should do what I think is right, you know, at this phase of my life, at this time in my life. And I let somebody else, you know, take the burden of caring for me. And I think that's the transition that has to happen. And I feel like, you know, Zemply can make that happen.
No, it's great. We're coming to the top of the show, Aparna. So closing thoughts for all those startups that are around the world and our audience, by the way, we're in 57 countries now. How do you go down through, and one is, what advice would you give to them in terms of making their dreams real? And the other thing is, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
So I can answer the second question first. You can reach out to me connect with me on my Twitter, now X. Connect me on Facebook or LinkedIn. I'm available. My name is Aparna Pujar, so you could Google me on that. What advice would I give founders? You know, solve a real problem and, you know, fall in love with the problem, not the solution, because the more you, this is the title of a book by Yuri Levine, and, you know, I've been reading it, which is an excellent book, by the way. I think when you look at a problem and go deep into it and try to solve it in the best possible way, you know, like really outperform on solving it, that gives you a strong foothold, that makes you, you know, carve out a niche for yourselves. And, you know, while you're doing that, the other things will fall in place. I would also say, you know, not be, it's hard for a startup initially, you are doing this, and not be a Swiss Army knife, like be everything for everyone, pick one problem and solve it really well. You know, there is opportunities will emerge. You know, the more you deep dive into the problem, you kind of start looking at the space in a very different way with a very different lens. Keep an eye on the competition, but I wouldn't so much worry about it. You know, if you know you're on the right track, you know, somehow that will fall in place. Management principles, you know, I strongly believe in the Porter model. So I always use that as, you know, my guideline for how to build products, how to bring them to market. What does it take? You know, how to find your customers, how to find your partners, how to find the ecosystem. So I sort of depend on that as, you know, my just rule book, if you will. But yeah, other than that, your passion and belief in yourselves is what will drive this.
No, thank you for taking time. It's great seeing you today. We appreciate it. And thanks to all my audience for joining one more time. GESD presents Silicon Valley AI and Tech. And I'm your host, Gary Fowler. Stay safe and stay healthy. And I'll be back to you again soon. Thank you, partner. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back again soon. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.